Hi, this is Heaton Shaw.
And this is Stelly Efti. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about the legal side of running a startup or a business.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah. We want you to do your best.
And maybe some experiences that we had that we think could be useful to people to be aware of, some best practices, some mistakes we've seen a lot of founders make when it comes to the legal side of things and working with lawyers and contracts and all that stuff. But a disclaimer, we're not lawyers, right? And we don't claim to be lawyers. We're not experts. Anything we say in this podcast is not to be considered like formal legal advice. It's just two founders talking about, you know, their personal experiences, and if you learn something from that, that's cool, but don't use this instead of a lawyer for your legal questions. So the reason why I wanted to talk about this is that, I don't know, I was talking to a founder last week, and they asked me about choosing a law firm, and that reminded me of some mistakes I've seen a lot of founders make and some mistakes we've made and some experiences and kind of opinions that I've formed over the years about like the legality of things when you're a startup, but also how to pick and choose a lawyer and how to think about that stuff. And I thought that there's a lot of mistakes people can make. So I thought we might be able, and I know you had like real legal troubles and you know a ton about this stuff. You know, I just thought there's some experiences that a lot of people could benefit from us sharing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the part of startups that I think people don't really think about because, you know, you don't, for one, you really think about it when you have legal trouble, right? Or you're doing some kind of, or you're negotiating a term sheet and raising money, or, you know, you're trying to really solidify enterprise contracts. So it's not something that many companies do, you know, often. One of the things in my experience has been that I've had like 5-figure and 6-figure monthly legal bills before because of a class action lawsuit that one of my companies faced, as well as like previous businesses, just legal was just a big deal. And so I've probably talked to more lawyers than anybody that's hearing this right now, unless they're a lawyer or in working in legal in some way. So yeah, I think it's a great topic. When you mentioned it, I was just like, oh yeah, I was reviewing a document for somebody yesterday, and it's one of those things where, like, honestly, like, even my business partners know that, like, I don't like reading those documents, and I've learned to and obviously gotten very good at it. The thing about those documents is they're usually in language that, you know, as a normal layman meaning non-legal human, non-lawyer, it's actually pretty tricky to understand these documents and try to decipher the words. So I'm going to start with my first tactical thing, which is, you know, you should interview your lawyers and really try to find the ones that can explain things to you in really simple terms and help you make decisions. Because one of the things about law and legal is oftentimes they don't make the decision for you. They present you with options and you have to pull out the right decision from them because their job isn't to tell you what to do. Their job is to present the various options to you and help you understand what the implications are.
All right. So I love that. And I wanna jump on that because it's definitely one of the things that I wanted to talk about, which is this. I think a lot of people have this idea, and I had it for sure, that you find a expert lawyer, and now you have somebody in your corner that will proactively and creatively problem solve with you or suggest ways to approach things in a better way and all that stuff. A lot of people place a lot of responsibility on the legal side to the lawyer. And my experience has been that most lawyers will not be very proactive, will not be creative at all in most cases, and will usually give you the most kind of, at first, the most basic answers. They'll try to optimize for being as correct as possible, as safe as possible, and if you, and they're not going to feel the responsibility to tell you, hey, you should structure this totally different and it could have all these benefits for you. They'll review what you give them and say, well, this looks fine. This is one little, you know, on 5.2.3.4, we should maybe change the language a little bit. They'll look a lot into the details, not often and not always into the big picture. And just the mental frame of mind of realizing that you are always going to be responsible for all the legal sides of your business, for all your contracts, for everything. And a lawyer is a resource that can help you answer your questions, be a sparring partner, but not the person that's responsible ultimately for all kind of the legal sides of your business. I think that mental frame of mind is very, very important, not to be disappointed and not to get into some real trouble, because you're assuming your law firm or your lawyer will take care of certain things that they may or may not take care of.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like these days, like they're there to tell you what the rules are and tell you what the options are, but the creativity doesn't come from them. The optionality of like what to do does definitely come from them. But if you don't ask them very good questions and don't go deep into understanding the implications yourself, I don't mean independent of them, but like literally it's about asking them questions. And what happens is you end up with these things that are sub-optimized just because the lawyer said, oh, this is the standard terms or whatever. I will go out there and say one thing. When it comes to the legal profession, there is no standard. There's no standard term sheet. There's no standard contract. I don't really care what the lawyer tells you, but there is no standard. Everything can be fudged, and everything in terms of legal usually has to do with more than one party, right? So it's like you and another party trying to sign this document. This is why it's not standard. It's always about the negotiation and the terms and things like that, regardless of what it is. And so if, you know, one other tip would be if when it comes to kind of legal and thinking about like what a lawyer can do for you and what they can't do for you, I think it's very important to basically dig in yourself and make sure that you have this understanding and realize that you're negotiating with somebody else and that there aren't really standard terms regardless of what anyone tries to tell you, especially lawyers.
Yeah, I love that. There's no standard terms. Here's a good example of that. Like when I first started working with lawyers around the business, sometimes I would ask them a question. I would go, what are our options in this situation? And they would go, well, there's really two options, A, and then they would describe option A, and B, and then describe option B. If I didn't like A and B, or if I didn't think they're the greatest options, I would still just go, shit, those are our options. And I would, within that constraint, think, well, which one of these two do I like better? Today, when we talk to a lawyer, and we had this recently where we talk to a lawyer and we're like, well, what are our options here? And the lawyer goes, well, there's option A and there's option B. And we go, well, we don't like these. So what other options are there? And they're like, well, I don't know. We're like, well, here's what we want. We want these things. How can we get these things? And the lawyer was like, well, we could create an option C and it would touch some of these things. Then maybe it's an option D and it creates these things. And at the end of it, we had like 20 different possible ways to go about it, where at the beginning, we were only presented with two. And it comes back to you not just accepting whatever is told to you, but you telling this person's working for you or this firm is working for you. You need to have the clarity of, here's what we want the outcome to be. How can we get there? Right? And sometimes it means pushing your legal sparring partner, your lawyer, and going, well, I don't like any of these. I'm sure there's some other ways. What can we do here? And sometimes you nudge them and push them a little bit, and all of a sudden there's like 10 more things, 10 more options that open themselves where they didn't present these at the beginning.
Yeah, you have to realize a whole lawyer's job is basically creativity, right? It's creativity because they know the rules. And their job is to help you understand what they are and then not break them, but work against those rules, work within that construct. But like they are oftentimes are so rigid, or in the case that you're describing, they just didn't understand your criteria. So you sharing what your exact sort of criteria is and what you're optimizing for, I think that was a key word there for you in that conversation. They can come up with more options. It's kind of like this. Don't be lazy. Don't just sit there and be like, oh, there's these two options my lawyer said, and that's it. It's like, no, actually, it's your business. You're citing this document that you're negotiating with the lawyer and whatever other party there is. Like, do some, like, don't be lazy. Like dig in. Like, try to understand it. Not even try. Like, go understand it and figure out kind of what you're optimizing for and what you're trying to do. This even applies to term sheets. It's fascinating to me how many founders look at these legal documents, sign them, and don't really understand all the clauses in there. Or what the stuff means. And it's even more astounding to me that lawyers don't automatically explain these things to first-time founders or even founders in general when they're signing these term sheets, because there's a lot of things in there that the venture capital firms are going to understand a lot better than you. So it's really important for you to understand those things as well, to understand the implications for your business.
Yeah, I think that you need to realize that if you think about the lawyer's perspective, a lot of lawyers, their business model is charging by the hour, right? And usually there's a structure, there's a senior person that might be assigned to your comp, but then there's some more junior associates that do most of the work typically. And this lawyer is doing work for many, many different clients. When they walk into the room or when they pick up the phone and they talk to you, they have not thought about your business at all in the past, whatever the time frame was that you last talked to them. And they might do a little bit of prep work, but they're coming in and they have a million different clients' stuff on their plate. They have their own life and their own problems. You are responsible for your business. You are the one that knows everything, thinks about this all day long. You cannot just rely on the lawyer for not just giving you information and helping you, but for like doing the quote unquote thinking. Like, oh, he thought about all the options and this, he thought that this is the best strategic way for us to go. A lot of times, if you work with your lawyer and you tell them what you want, you tell them what the outcomes are, and you challenge them when you don't like the answers, and you do the homework and you read the contracts and the fine print and you work with the lawyer, you'll get the best work from them and you get the best out of it. But you ultimately, the buck stops with you. You still are fully responsible for all the legal side of your business. Doesn't matter if you pay a lawyer to work for you. They have a million things on their mind that a lot of times they walk into the meeting and they haven't thought a minute about what's going to happen in this meeting because they were just going from one meeting to another, from one client to another. And you need to set the stage. You need to do the thinking. You need to own the outcome at the end of the day. Let's talk about some other one big mistake I remember learning about that another founder made, and it kind of helped me avoid the same mistake when I started my startup. This might be a very Silicon Valley-ish thing, but I think it can apply very generically in some other fashions in terms of working with law firms. And then we can talk a little bit more about like the way you should talk about legality in your business as you're doing things and asking yourself, is this legal? Isn't it? Could we get into trouble or not? There might be some interesting anecdotes to share there. But I remember talking to a founder. When I moved to the Valley 10 years ago, I remember fairly early on, I was trying to find a legal firm. And I'd heard about this thing that in Silicon Valley, it's super important that you work with these top three law firms because they have the connections to all these founders. And they have all the experience and they know how to do everything right. And just working with them can be, you know, opening doors and making everything better, right? So I thought that it would be a very super important thing to work with one of the top three law firms. So I reached out to a bunch of founders, and one of the founders that was working with the law firm, I was like, hey, can you introduce me to them? And he shared something super valuable with me. He was like, yes, I can introduce you to them. They're like the people I work with there, the partners, they're fine. I'm not super excited, but here's a mistake you shouldn't make. When we started working with them, we never paid attention to the hours that were booked. And we would jump on way too many calls, and these calls were way too long, and a lot of times not always super productive. We were working with a junior associate at that firm. And by the time we had closed our round and raised, you know, our seed round, this is like 10 years ago, I think they had raised 500K, and their legal bill had grown to 100K or 100 and something. So he was like, it was incredibly painful to raise 500K and have to give up 100 immediately for all the legal bills that have built up. And this is a unique thing in Silicon Valley. A lot of firms will basically do work for you and bill you, but not charge for it until you raise your first round of capital, right? This is a fairly unique thing to Silicon Valley. So they were accruing, you know, and adding all these hours, but not having to pay for it. And then a few months into it, once they raised the money, they had to pay a lot of money. And he felt that a lot of these conversations and hours of calls that were booked were not necessary. They could have accomplished a lot of these things in email and in much shorter calls, because that specific associate was very talkative on the phone and it cost them a lot of money. I remember that, and we distinctly made the effort to not make that mistake, and I was still very inexperienced. But when we would work with our law firm, we made sure that a lot of the communication happened over email. We made sure that when we jumped on a call, we were very like, let's get to the point. What do we need to accomplish? This, this, and the other. Okay, that's it. Everything else, send us in an email. Thank you so much. And not to be chit-chatty about the weather and, you know, scheduling calls over calls over calls when we could accomplish a lot more just in email and being factual. And our legal, we raised a lot more money than 500K, and our legal bill was a lot smaller, significantly smaller than that. So that's just one mistake that I've seen sometimes, especially in the Valley. I don't know if it's, but just some, a lot of entrepreneurs will bitch about their legal bills being too high without, again, managing that process, without being aware, a law firm, the way they make money and associate, the way that that person progresses in their career is by booking, you know, by booking a lot of hours, by charging for a lot of hours and accumulating a lot of bookable hours. So you need, you're responsible for making sure that there's no waste happening there and, you know, time is used efficiently.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of deferred fees, although I know how it can help founders and startups quite a bit. If you have deferred fees like that, you still want to be really, really picky about the hours and how your money is being spent, because it is money you're spending before you have it. I mean, that's always, you know, a crapshoot, especially with service providers, regardless of whether it's legal or any other profession. Yeah, and the other thing I would add is, like, you want attention from your firm and you want great service. And oftentimes it is junior people working on what they would call standard sort of cookie cutter stuff, especially when it comes to incorporating a company and things like that. So I've got, you know, a firm that I've worked with for the last, I want to say like 10, maybe 11 years, depending on how you count it. And it's been the same firm and they've been through all my companies. They even personally have helped us on things and their referrals have been great when we've had things that they couldn't do. But they're a much smaller boutique firm. And I enjoy that because the larger firms will have all these departments in-house and they tend to obviously be more expensive. And also they might not be the best at some of these other areas. So I love it when the firm is able to refer outside of the firm, outside counsel, outside of the firm. That's not your main sort of legal. And the larger firms don't always do that. I know they have, you know, they have a very good reputation because of their brand. But they don't always, you know, they don't always just service startups either or businesses. They also service venture capital firms and stuff. And so you can, you know, I'm sure the lawyers will hate me for saying this, but it's just my opinion. But oftentimes there's a, I wouldn't call it a conflict of interest, or I'm going to get like berated by lawyers. But like there is something that you need to optimize for there when your firm also works with venture capitalists, not just businesses and startups, and all of them do. So it's something to really think about when you're getting their advice around, especially raising money and company incorporation and things like that. Because sometimes you don't yet need the, you know, the type of incorporated company before you raise money that you need post raising money. And there's ways to transition that. And there's all kinds of things like that that can come about. There's also a high value to working with a firm that does have an idea of what the sort of terms are right now in terms of term sheets and valuations. Because if they see enough of these terms on both sides from the VC perspective, as well as the business and startup perspective, there can be a ton of value to get out of that. But oftentimes, if you don't ask the questions like, hey, what are the trends you guys are seeing on the terms? What are the trends you guys are seeing on valuation or on early rounds? You might not get the answers to help guide you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch sides a little bit and talk for a few minutes at least about the broader way of thinking about the law and running a startup or starting a business or being in business, right? So not just how to work with a law firm or a lawyer, but how to think about the law in broader terms. I'll throw this out, and I'm curious about your experience. You know, we personally, so far, have never run into major legal troubles, right? There's once in a while you get some BS letter from some, you know, lawyer from some BS company about one thing or another, and it's very clear that this can be ignored, and then it never materialized itself into anything serious. We got into some small things here and there, but we never had real massive legal trouble so far. And I know that you talked openly about, you know, prior company, and you guys were in a class action lawsuit, so that's a lot more direct and challenging experience with it. But in general, what I've observed is that obviously, as a founder, you're not a law expert, you're not a legal expert. Obviously, there is black and white, and then there's a lot of gray in between. And you don't want to be in the black, like doing things that are absolutely illegal and unethical, and you know it, lying, stealing, faking things in some bad way. Like there's a rare example. I don't think, and I would assume that nobody that listens to us for a sustainable amount of time is the type of person that's interested in like just stealing from people or doing things that are blatantly illegal. Then there's the white, and I don't know if there's any business or human being that fully exists in the white, meaning there's nothing they've ever done that could not be challenged from a, you know, law perspective, because there's so many laws you could break, right? There's even this article, some person, I read this somewhere, that there's not a human being, oh, I think maybe even Warren Buffett said you couldn't follow a human being for 10 or 15 minutes without you finding something where they break the law, because there's so many laws and so many that we're not aware of. But so it's very hard to be perfect on that scale. But there's a gray in between. A lot of startups and a lot of successful startups have shared stories where they did things that were, you know, questionable from a legal perspective, either violating the terms of service on some other service, right? They would go and scrape data from another website, although they weren't allowed to get started. Or they were pinging other people's customers, although that was not fully legal. Or there's lots of things that are kind of in the gray zone and sometimes very close to flat out illegal. I know a ton of startups that started with like violating LinkedIn's terms of service. They raised venture capital and they kind of started that way and grew until they were able to shift their model to something that was fully legal and have a real partnership with LinkedIn. But their first year or two, they were clearly like doing things that were in violation with other companies' terms. My experience is that if you do things that are illegal, you're fucked. Long term, I wouldn't advise that. But if you're too conservative, if you always try to do everything by the letter of the law and never take any risk in any way, you're not going to really move fast enough. And you're probably going to, in many cases, not in all, you're probably going to be walking too slowly because you're always going to want to check everything with your lawyers and have everything copyrighted and have everything patented. And that slows down things a lot. So most successful entrepreneurs are taking calculated risks, even when it comes to the law at times, on a case-by-case basis. That's what I've observed over the years. What's your thinking about this, and what's your kind of experience and observation?
Yeah, I mean, you're really looking at risk, and lawyers are really great at helping you understand risk, business risk. And so for me, it's that simple. It's like, if I think we're going to do something that puts our business at risk, I would go talk to a lawyer. That would be like just one example. A lot of it has to do with, you know, lessons I learned the hard way are like, if you're putting JavaScript on websites, then there is some privacy-related, cookie-related risks that you should probably make sure you understand. Thankfully, now there's some precedence, thanks to my company and a few others, around like what's going to be a gray area versus completely okay. So just assessing risk and understanding risk would be the way I would think about it. Oftentimes, you just don't know. So you're in a startup especially, you might not have the legal, you know, the money to pay, or you might not even think about it. So, you know, in those cases, there's not much you can actually do. Now, when it comes to like agreements and things like that that you're signing, you absolutely need to have them checked out with law firm, legal lawyers, and make sure that whatever you're signing makes a lot of sense for you to sign and that you're not going to get in any trouble for signing it. One classic example would be like non-disclosure agreements. I tend to rarely sign them. They don't really mean much. Lawyers have told me that, you know, they don't really hold up in court or anything like that. So then why are we even signing them? Sometimes, obviously, if you're actually working for someone and they're paying you, those kind of NDA type things are included in the agreement. That's totally fine. That makes sense. But if you're just doing it to get some information or something like that, it can be a very tricky